We're going to go and speak to Malcolm now. Good afternoon, Malcolm. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm great. Yes, nice to hear that one. Pentre Célèbre, who was actually the middle leg of a double, oh, treble, actually, for Olivier Pellier. If it had played the year before, that was Helicio, who was owned by Enrique Sarasola, the well-known Spanish guy whose son, I think, is very famous now for his hotels as well as show jumping.
Right. That's what the beauty of all this. There's so many people linked to it, isn't there? And just watching that as well, just the kind of the atmosphere that it brings, you know, that you can hear the horses just on the ground. You can hear the commentary, the roar, the crowd. It's just an amazing, magical atmosphere.
It is. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit different this year, but still, I think the TV experience will be good. There will be 1,000 people there, no members of the public, because this is such a big event that by the time you fitted in all the people from France Gallo, who are the kind of jockey club people, all the breeders, every owner's going to go, obviously, and all their friends that they're allowed to get in. But I've been listening to racing with this crowd of 1,000, and weirdly enough, it does still have quite a good atmosphere. Obviously, it's not quite as much as when they're all going completely mental, 70,000, 80,000 people, but there is still some atmosphere. Yeah, definitely.
What's your fears going forward at the moment? Because, of course, there's a lot of football clubs that are, you know, League One, League Two, that are looking at the possibility of, well, a very unsure future with no crowds. What's it like for horse racing?
Well, horse racing is different in so much as we don't really have leagues. There are better races, but even on the smaller race days, you sometimes have good horses, and big race days, you have smaller owners. So it's all a bit more mixed up. But basically, there is funding in place. It was just announced last weekend, up until at least kind of halfway through next year. So if there are no crowds back in that period, racing will be pretty much okay. But obviously, what happens after that, like everything, is open to conjecture. But in the short term, they're going to be okay. They still have the turnover, the media rights on the big days, but obviously it just depends how long this goes on for.
And how much does the betting industry impact horse racing as well? Because obviously there's a lot of people bet on it, and I should imagine sponsorship comes from that as well.
Well, it does. The sponsorship is down, to a certain extent, and prize money is actually down, but it's the owners who are having to take a hit, and some will say, well, perhaps they can actually afford it, and some of them obviously can, but it's the little owners, they're taking a bit of a hit. But I think actually turnover is not that much difference, because if you think about it, although there's lots of transactions on the track itself, the majority for a really long time has been off the track, so that hasn't been affected. And if anything, because there's been more horse racing on TV, it's actually taken up the slack, and they're not doing too bad from that point of view.
Well, let's look at the book then, celebrating the century of the Prix d'Or de Triomphe, and arguably the biggest race, most well-known race in the world. I suppose there would be a few Americans that may disagree, and maybe a few in Cheltenham that disagree with that. Maybe the Grand National may disagree with that. Is it a bit of a debate in the horse racing world?
Well, it is, but statistically at the moment, you can say the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe is the best race in the world, because they have a competition whereby it's called the Longines Awards that happen every year, where they actually give the ratings, taking into account the ratings of all the horses who've run.
Yeah.
And for the last 3 years, the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe is the best horse race in the world. But that's only official. I agree. I love the Grand National, love the Breeders' Cup, love all the others. I think the thing with horse racing is that you've got so many good highlights. But yeah, this, for me, is the one. When I was a little kid, I just couldn't believe what was going on there in Paris, and I've just enjoyed it ever since.
Going back 100 years ago, how international was it even then? Because obviously there's people from all over, like Japan, Australia, places, Italy, Germany, that come and are attracted to this, not just racers, but actually people that go and watch it as well. Has it always been international?
Well, no, it built up gradually. In the first race in 1920, there were only two overseas runners. There was a horse who'd won a big race in Spain, but he was actually trained in Italy. And there was a horse from England who is trained in the place where John Gosden now trains. And that one actually won the race, much to the chagrin of the French, who, though, had their big superstar Czar win the next two. So that kind of made them happy. But no, England won the first race. But gradually it's moved up. And now, as you say, Japan's still waiting for the elusive elusive winners there. They've had one which they've bred a bit and owned, but the Orfevre, who came the closest, it took the lead and then hit the rail in the last couple of strides, losing out to Solemia. And I'm going to make another Spanish connection here, because that one, trained by Carlos Lafron Parrier, who is actually Spanish but part of the head racing dynasty in France now.
Wow. What about the Brits, as far as I remember Lester Piggott, of course, riding in it. How well have we done generally?
Right. If you go by the country trained, Britain has had 15, Ireland 8, Italy 6, Germany 2, and the other 67 have been won by France. But many of the early ones were really only French runners occasionally, particularly around the war. The few after the war, no one was going to go over to Vichy France to run a horse at that stage. So they pretty much had it to themselves on that occasion. It's in the modern era where we now have so many Irish horses, so many Japanese horses, German, Italian, Spanish occasionally. So, yeah, it's gradually built. But, yeah, the French still have got the numbers on their side at the moment.
Has it become far more corporate lately? Because it just seems, it seemed like the Grand Prix racing sometimes with the amount of equipment and backroom staff and all that comes with it. I should imagine it was far more rudimentary 100 years ago.
Oh, yes, it was. And obviously every scientific leap forward has been taken on board by racing. But you still do get that the little horses, not necessarily little in size, but with little owners, and they haven't cost too much. But generally, yes, when we get to these really top races like this, you'll find that the Cormore horses, the Godolphin horses, and sometimes you find out that the person who seems to have the outsider is still someone who's represented some multi-million pound industry somewhere in the world.
Are we going to get anything in particular for celebrating the 100 years this year? Of course, it's such a shame that there's not going to be the crowds there to celebrate in that way.
Well, what I think is there may be something, but I think they might actually defer it a couple of years, because we didn't race twice in the late 1930s because of the war.
Yeah.
So because of the circumstances we have now, I wouldn't be surprised if they put it back. This is actually going to be the 99th race next Sunday. So maybe they might think 2 years' time, when we actually have the 100th race, maybe they'll go big time there. And that might be appropriate, I think, actually. At the moment, it's not really something to celebrate too much, despite the fact that I am celebrating it in my book.
Yes, exactly, yeah. And maybe we'll have a glass of champers on the day. I can see exactly that would make a lot of common sense for it to do that.
Yeah.
Just looking at some of the things you pick up in the book, and of course, anybody that wants to go deeper than what this interview will allow with time today, you'll have to pick a copy of the book up yourself, which you can do on our website, tre.radio. Order yourself a copy of the book here in Spain, and you can spend as much time in it as you like. Tell us about the winner who came back from stud to recapture his crown.
Yes, this was a horse called Mott Rico, who I'm just going to check that I was actually talking about the right horse. Yes, it is Mott Rico, definitely.
I wouldn't know. Just bluff it if you have to.
I'm just thinking of the actual double winners. He won in 1930, first of all, and because he'd done so well, he'd been a good jumper as well as on the flat, and they sent him to stud. And he just didn't really perform, I think is the word you use in that context. And so he was obviously still had plenty of talent. And eventually they were disappointed with his outcome, which in the long term proved to be brilliant. He bred some champions. But they thought, no, we're sending back. And at the grand old age of seven, he went back in 1932 and won it again.
Wow.
And he is the oldest winner of the race.
I was going to ask you that. It's 37. Yeah. That's, what's the kind of retirement cutoff age generally?
Well, I mean, again, a lot of them even retire when they're three.
Really?
It was 1937. He was actually seven when that happened, yeah. But Enable, who's the favourite this year, who's won twice and finished second last year, she is six, and that really is relatively old. She's only been kept in training because she is brilliant and because she has got a good chance of making it three wins. No horse has ever won the Art three times. Seven have won it twice, but none have won it three times. Only two have tried. Enable last year when she was just beaten, mainly because of the soft ground, potentially, and Trev, who was a wonder horse, who you might remember only a few years ago, who finished fourth on her hat-trick attempt.
Well, so she's having another go this year.
Yes, definitely, and she is the favourite.
Right. Well, I'm now bought into this. You see, and is that generally for horse racing? Generally, the age there, because I was really surprised when you said how young they are.
Well, no, this is for flat race horses. Yeah. Jumpers go on into their teens, so, you know, maybe 11, 12, 13, 14. It just really depends. But it's, again, it's all down to welfare. You don't want to push horses too much. I mean, they're fantastic animals, but they are actually quite brittle. And so some of them just really stand racing, but a lot of them get retired not because they're injured. It's just because the trainers are brilliantly sensitive to all this stuff and go, okay, I think we've done enough there. And then they retrain them to do other things. So many ex-race horses now do brilliant other things like show jumping and, you know, ride for the disabled and all that kind of thing. So they have a much longer life afterwards, but it's a little bit like footballers. I mean, footballers, you know, they retire in their early 30s, don't they? And they hope to live to about 80-odd, so... if their knees hold up, obviously.
I think some of the horses might be better pundits as well, but anyway, that's rather
well. Well, yeah, absolutely.
what about the name of the race? Where does that come from?
Well, it's from, obviously, the monument, the Arc de Triomphe, which I think most people know in the middle of Paris. The race, the name had actually been used for a really low quality race at one stage, a thing called a cellar, where really it's quite poor and the horse that wins it goes up for auction and normally doesn't go for much money. But they managed to reclaim that, and obviously we see the Arc de Triomphe used in all the big sporting spectaculars. Of course, only last weekend we saw the Tour de France, Pogacar being crowned in front of the Arc de Triomphe as it was being lit up in the background. It's just a spectacular monument, started by Napoleon, finished by Louis Philippe, I think it was, who was the king about four down the line. And of course, you know, you think of the Arc de Triomphe, where of course there was horse racing as well at one time, and the Arc de Triomphe, they are probably the two most famous of what are many, many things in Paris that are well worth seeing.
Who is Monsieur Arc, the winner of more arcs than anyone else? Bit of a mystery there. Are you allowed to tell us now or not?
All right. Yes, I can, yes.
Okay,
this is the great André Farb. Actually, he's a runner this year. He's got Persian King. I'm not sure if he'll stay, but he's such a wizard. He was champion trainer about 25 years in a row, and he's now trained 8 ARC winners, taking over the outright record from Charles Semblet, who rode 3 winners and then trained 4. So his total was 7. But with Volgeist winning last year, that was the horse that stopped Enable winning last year, he notched up his 8th victory, and he now reigns supreme as the meister of his craft.
So where does he come in? I mean, he's not the favourite, though, this year.
No, Persian King is, let's have a look, he's actually among the 20-1 chances, I think. In fact, you can get 33s in some places, but generally 20-1. This is a really good horse, but we're not sure he's going to stay the distance. So
might get a good price on that one there.
Well, you never know. He's one of my favourite horses, so I feel overly biased towards him, so I hope he stays, but we'll just have to see on the day, I guess.
Now, tell me, and this is the final one, because we don't want to give too much away, too many spoilers, but the horse who won half the race on the track and then the other half off it, how on earth did he get away with that?
All right, this was a horse called Saint Crespin, who was owned by the current Aga Khan's father, Ali Khan, who you may know if you your history goes back, was actually married to some a well-known Hollywood star at one stage. Anyway, what happened was it was the closest finish of all time. There were about 7 horses all within inches of each other. It turned out to be a dead heat between Saint Crespin and another horse, but the other horse had interfered with him. So he won half the race on the track. It took about 20 minutes in those days. It was 1959 before they could actually announce the photograph result. But then there was an objection, and in the end he won the other half of the race because the horse who'd finished upsides him had bored into him and interfered with him, and so he was given the whole race in the steward's room.
Well, you just took me back to sitting with my dad watching the horse racing, and there'd be a photo finish and there'd be an inquiry.
Yeah.
And you'd be waiting literally what felt like a lifetime to find out whether your horse had won or not. Is it quicker nowadays?
It is, but still, if you actually work in horse racing, it's a thing you don't ever want to happen in the last race because you want to get home, and obviously, invariably, that's when it happens.
Well, listen, really appreciate you coming. I can hear your passion in the interview for it, Malcolm, I really can. And looking forward to this year's race, of course, and maybe third time lucky. Well, not well done. Well, I'm bought into this now, you see, Enable this year.
Enable. Let's hope she is willing and able to do it.
Yes,
she's a brilliant horse. And Well, good luck. If you have a couple of euro, of hard-earned pounds on that one, or, yes, euros, it might be where you
euros,
are.
Euros, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Malcolm. The book's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's a fascinating book, it really is, and it's celebrating a century of the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, as my French isn't very good, as you can tell, the history of Europe's greatest horse race. Thank you very much, Malcolm.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.